Today on ABCDTOS, Return of the Archons.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm assuming you're welcoming back. Maybe this is the first episode. If this is your first episode, welcome to ABCDTOS. This is the only show that we know of that goes alphabetically through all of the episodes of Star Trek, the original series, from All Our Yesterdays to Wolf in the Fold. I'm Pete the Retailer.
I'm Tom Taylor.
I'm John Engel.
And I'm Joe Mazel.
And today, we are talking about the Return of the Archons.
Because we are of all of the body.
Exactly. Yes. This is,
and we assume all you are, too.
Some people
I am.
Might call this one the one with Red Hour. That's also how it could be known.
This is totally going to be a festival of recording.
Festival! Yeah.
I love that sounds like that guy's just kind of like festival, like going by real fast.
He's on his way.
Can't wait to talk about festival.
Festival. A festival. This is Return of the Archon, season 1, episode 21. Or season 1, episode 22 in production order. And I'm not sure if that includes the cage or not, in which case then this would be an alignment of sorts. Mm.
This is the Blackjack or Bust episode.
Exactly. Depending on production or release order.
Yes.
So it aired February 9th, 1967, and here's the Google blurb. While investigating the disappearance of the USS Archon on the planet Beta 3, Kirk and his crew encounter an old-style Western community brainwashed and subservient to a sinister godlike figure called Landru.
Hmm. That's a lot better than the Paramount Plus description, which I think is literally the Enterprise meets Landru.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, not Landru.
Yeah. I mean, it's succinct. I'll give it that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I did. The episode starts out, and I love the way it starts out. We get kind of like in media res. We're just like, like Sulu and his buddy there, whose name I've forgotten, are in the middle of a mission.
O'Neill?
Yeah.
O'Neill? Yeah, I think so.
Oh, O'Neill. Yes. Not Brenner. Brenner is later. Brenner's a different guy who goes in. But yeah, O'Neill. There you go. O'Neill, who... oh, no, wait. Yeah, O'Neill is the guy who is in the... He was also... is also in Tholian Web as O'Neill.
Mm-hmm.
He was in... I wrote a little shorthand, and I can't tell what this says. A rock. A rock? What is a rock?
A rock.
Is there an episode called
that
A Rock?
Is hard somebody named Dwayne Earth. Johnson, I think?
Hmm. Oh, no. That's a different note, kind of blending into this note. He was in Balance of Terror. There you go. Balance of Terror. He played Brenner, though.
I do like the idea that there's like a ripoff generic wrestler called A Rock.
Not The Rock.
Not The Rock. No, nope. Yeah, I'm not claiming to be The Rock. I'm just a rock.
Just a rock.
And he was also in TOC. What abbreviation TOC mean? It's what episode is TOC?
Time of Confusion.
O.C.
The original...
The Commodore.
C.
That old Commodore.
To Oak Cockingbird.
There's a spinoff idea for you. That old Commodore.
is it a
crusty but benign Starfleet Commodore.
If you don't have my dinner ready by 3, things are going to get ugly. On a strict schedule.
Well, so Sean Morgan.
This old Citadel.
4 episodes of Star Trek, twice as O'Neill and twice as completely different guys. Let's see. Oh, it's the ultimate computer. It's TUC, not TOC.
Well, you know, Pete, that would have helped. And I know your handwriting, you know better.
When I focus on my handwriting, it's great. But when I don't, it's who knows? So anyway, in the ultimate computer, he plays Harper. So we'll have to keep an eye out for ultimate computer. Keep an eye out for Harper, because that's really O'Neill.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, everybody.
It's like a few months from now, right? We'll be good.
They're just on the planet, like in the middle of they're doing their thing, and it's pretty great. Yep. Like I love that little action kind of like dumping us right into it thing. That's awesome.
And, one of my notes is great cold open.
Yeah, yep, me too. Sulu leading the away team, that's also good. Like, you know, it's not, you don't, I feel like in most episodes you would have them kind of like enter what we get after the opening credits, where we get the guys walking around being like, I wonder what this is. What's supposed to be going on, you know?
Yeah.
And then they encounter everybody. Instead, we get this great, just kind of like they're being chased. That's always a good way to start out. But yeah, they're being chased by these robed, hooded figures. And before he can beam up, so one of O'Neill, I guess, runs away. Is it O'Neill?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it no, Lindstrom is a different guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. he runs away. Yeah, it is O'Neill. He runs away, and to avoid the blast of these guys, Sulu is like, we can do it. We're getting beamed up. But before he can get beamed up, he gets zapped. And when he shows up on the Enterprise, he's all like, hey, what's going on? Or like, he's like totally...
It's paradise.
Yeah.
But he got a like a fencing foil I could use?
Maybe a revolver?
Yeah. Love to you, my botany lab.
oh my.
And so he's been zapped and something's wrong. And he's a lot like the people on the that we will later meet on the planet. When they were like, all right, we got to go figure out what's going on. They get a posse. They beam down to the planet.
Just like Andre the Giant.
Exactly. And there's a funny thing because Kirk is looking around and is like, hey, everybody's, or no, Spock, I think, says, Kirk or says to Spock, he's like, everybody's, look at everybody. They're mindless, vacant, full of mindless, vacant contentment, just like Spock. Sulu. And I love the idea that somebody wasn't like hip to, they weren't briefed on the whole thing. They're just like, whoa, rude. Like, what? They weren't up on current events. They don't know that Sulu was down here and beamed back up and was zapped. They're just like, all right, we got to go down to the planet, get your team together. And like, all right, come down.
God, Spock, that's me.
Yeah. Oh. No, I know you don't have feelings, but still. Ouch.
Sulu says nothing but nice things about you all the time.
Yeah. You're really the great bird of being a jerk.
Yeah.
And then we get our guy, I don't know, this is one of the outstanding, one of the main memories of this episode for me is Bilar. Bilar.
One of my main memories of Star Trek.
Yeah. That guy has a great look to him. I mean, I don't mean like he's handsome. Really please weird. Make that clear.
Joe loves Bilar.
But he's so distinct
Mr.
looking.
Joe Bilar.
But your daddy can put them up, can he?
Yeah. It's such an odd delivery.
Everything about
intentionally.
Him
but it's ADR too, isn't it? I suspect that that voice is not matching. There's something like distant about it, which I think adds to it, like makes it. But it does, something doesn't seem quite right about the voice with the man. I don't know why. I could be totally off about that. Maybe it's just the performance and his like
he is
odd,
so
vacant
weird.
Contentment
almost,
that
weird.
Is throwing me off.
He would
like,
be,
why is he talking like that?
He would be perfect in like a prisoner-like scenario where the whole atmosphere, where your whole environment is a sham. Like, I would totally like, wait, this guy's off enough that I know something's wrong, but right enough that maybe it's not. You know,
well,
be seeing you, Aya.
We do know that something's going on. And we talked about this guy a little bit because remember he was in Patterns of Force not too long ago.
Right.
Yeah.
He was a Nicosian SS lieutenant. And
figures.
He goes by two different. He's Ralph Maurer here. Ralph Maurer. His stage name, though, apparently is Lev Mailer. So I don't know which is.
I want to have a lot of people respond to me.
Yeah. Just cover as many bases as I can.
Yeah.
Lev Mailer still with us, as far as I can tell.
Hey.
He is. He's been teaching acting, and he's about like 88 years old.
Well, if there's anybody that's qualified to do that, yeah.
I recommend getting sweaty and getting your face right in the camera.
If you're going to stare at somebody, make sure it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. You can learn your lines, can't you?
You can enunciate like a weirdo, can't you?
Oddly, he was, that's totally intentional because they're meant to be weird in this. But it is.
You're singing his praises. Or else I freaked out.
Now, according to that, I don't know if we talked about this. Did we go into his IMDb page last time when we talked about him? According to this, he is Imperial Guard number one in the Star Wars Holiday Special, which I have to go back and look and see if, like,
number one,
which one that is. I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna take the burden upon myself. I'm gonna go back and watch the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Really, you're gonna twist your arm with that.
Yeah,
that would be with Art Carney, probably, right?
Yeah, it could be the one with Art Carney. That guy seems different. I know that guy.
Is
like,
that
the
one
with
the
mustache?
But, so he's not the guy who built anything by hand.
Solo.
Solo.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to have to go back. Could be one of the ones that come into the house, too. The one that they
blame Bruce Valanche. Yeah. I didn't write the episode.
I forgot that there was ones that came into the house.
Yeah, there's the one that they trick into watching Jefferson Starship.
Right.
Which is basically the only way anybody could watch Jefferson Starship.
But I also wanted to point out that, hey, I'm doing it this time. I'm doing it. He was also in an episode of Mrs. Columbo.
Ooh. Well, see, that doesn't count.
I know.
We don't care about Mrs. Columbo.
But with Janeway.
Yeah. Although it is with Janeway. Yeah, there's a kind of thing when we do our ultimate Columbo show, like, we're going to have to discuss Mrs. Columbo.
No, we're not. No, we're not.
We are.
No. Mm-hmm.
I don't think
I quit.
It's Janeway. I mean, that's probably going to be our Patreon when we're doing Voyager, right?
They couldn't even, they literally retooled that show like episode by episode. Like every, in that Columbo book I read, they talked about how every episode had to be basically retooled. And they just kept changing it every time they wrote a new one.
It's I love the episode she was Tootie's mom all of a sudden.
Yeah. Yep. I love the idea though. I would love if when they brought Columbo back in the 80s on ABC, if they're like, how's your wife, Lieutenant? Like, oh, she went back to her home planet.
She got canceled.
Like if they lost totally poochied her.
Yeah. We can't say lost in space.
He wouldn't even let them use his photograph in the title sequence.
I thought that you do distinctively see his photograph in the opening credits. Knew. But I mean, I watched it once on YouTube years ago, so...
I've got some episodes on DVD, and I started watching one, and I got like...
Wait. Mrs. Columbo was released on DVD?
Some episodes are in the Columbo box set.
Wow.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Did they not call that the Columbox?
No, they didn't. You can call it that if you'd like.
Yeah, I mean...
Sounds good to me.
Pete, I might have a marketing job for you.
Portmanteaus by Pete. They
more talk- like Pete Mantos.
Oh my god. Lost my job.
I just got a headache.
More like Portman Joe's.
No.
Hey.
We're all geniuses.
Which one of us is the boss now?
I have no idea.
Mona.
Angela, yeah. So.
It's not Tony Danza.
He's an employee.
Wu-Tang taught me that.
So they meet up with Billar and they talk and they meet his daughter and he's they're all being weird. They're like, you're here for the festival, right? And they're like, yes, festival, of course. Yes. What? And then all of a sudden the clock strikes six. You would think that they would be, I mean, I guess not if everybody's being controlled. You would think that they would be looking at the clock and have some preparation. They'd be like, oh, well, you know, 5 minutes. Hey,
Do you really need for festival?
I guess
goes down.
Yeah, absolutely none. That's the point.
Yeah.
You just go at it.
All of a sudden, the clock strikes six, and everybody goes nuts. There's a fun, like, they're running together as, like, a little phalanx, like the Enterprise, the away team, and they're running away. They're like, ah! And they run, they go try to find Tula's dad. Tula is the woman that they meet.
What's his name? Redger?
Redger, right. Like, it's not Roger.
That's Tula's daddy.
Yeah. He can put
He'll have
out.
A room for you.
She's played by an actress named Brioni Farrell.
That's a nice name.
Brioni Farrell, I guess that's a stage name. Her birth name is Xenia Gratzos.
I was about to say, yeah, it's got to be a stage name. Nobody's parents would hate their child that much, but I stand corrected.
Xenia Gratzos from Greece.
Now that we've seen the festival, is there an episode that involves rape or ravaging that Gene Roddenberry doesn't have a credited byline to?
Probably not.
I mean, this is just probably a story right?
It goes back and forth. Funny you should ask. I got a car now.
That is funny.
Are
we going to the shore?
Here's the story and script. Okay. Everybody take notes at home. Story premise, the perfect world in Star Trek is, which is that document that we've talked about where the pitch basically for Star Trek. And so Roddenberry just has a little slug line there. This was originally considered for one of the pilots. Remember, they were like, from this list of episode, like one sentence episodes, they're like, which one do you want to make into a pilot? wisely, not this one. Because it's a fine, you know, it's a good episode for what it is, but I don't think that's what you want to start off with that.
Although, we'll footnote that. There's something I want to say to that.
Story outline from that premise, story outline Paradise XML. Don't know what that means. By Gene Roddenberry.
Paradise 40... 50? Wait, what?
Oh, yeah, it could be, right? Episodes 10 before...
XML. So
XML. You wouldn't really do that, but you could, right? It's, I don't know, 950?
Yeah.
I don't know. No, because that's...
Wait, 990?
No, XML. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, stupid Romans.
Story outline number three by Roddenberry, all in 1964. Landru's Paradise.
Oh.
Story outline number four, 2 years later, August 66, by Boris Silbelman, who wrote the episode, credited with writing the episode. Story outline then. Revised story outline, presumably also by Silbelman, a couple days later. Actually, one day later. I wonder what revision is there. Just, no. Do this.
Let me tell you about 1960s television schedules. You got to move.
Revised story outline by Gene Kuhn. A couple weeks later, 14 September. Then first draft teleplay by Silbelman. Second draft teleplay by Silbelman. Revised teleplay by Stephen W. Karabastos. Remember that guy?
Oh, yeah.
He's back.
That household name.
Final draft teleplay by Gene Kuhn. Revised final draft teleplay by Roddenberry. November 29th, 66. Additional revisions. November 30th, December 1st, December 2nd, December 5th, December 7th.
Oh, boy.
So, filmed finally in December. So look at that. Some of those revisions were mid-filming.
That makes sense.
So, well, you can never tell.
Yeah.
Close to it.
Roddenberry was the last one to touch the pie here.
And it wouldn't be his last pie.
No.
He was portly.
What did he touch it with? Let's not find out.
No.
We
don't need a Jason Biggs singing here.
This pie metaphor is not really working for me.
So then they finally go to Reger's house and they meet some like three old men who are just like, what's going on? Hello?
Yeah,
like,
what are you doing?
Do you need help?
Should be at festival.
Including what's his name from what's the freaking episode?
Yeah, what's the name from what's the freaking episode?
From the Father's Day episode of Creepshow. He played Nathan Grantham and he'll always be close to my heart.
But that's not what I was thinking of.
The old man who says, "For the world is hollow and I have touched the sky."
That is the one.
The world is hollow and I have touched the sky.
Wait, what's the name of the episode again?
So he's not the guy from. So he's not the guy from Dagger in the Mind 2? The one who busts out of the box?
Dagger in the Mind 2.
The scientist who went through the Dagger of the Mind procedure, the Dagger procedure.
No.
And shows up in the supplies when they beam on the Enterprise. You know what I'm talking about?
That's the Omega Glory guy.
Right.
Okay, that's the American. Yeah. I'm getting my wild-looking old people confused.
Oh, but he's in the Cage too, right?
The Cage had a sequel.
Cage too.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did. The Menezer. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, both of them.
Bravo.
He's one of the
hats off to you.
One of the kind of fake survivors in the Cage.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those guys who was apparently that old for about three decades.
Yeah, which is good at work if you can get it. Yeah.
I made my face out of shoe leather.
Is that Haycom or Tamar? That's Tamar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tamar, the old man, John Lorimer, The Cage, Return of the Archons, World is Hollow, and I've Touched the Sky. He was in a bunch of old-timey movies. There's also...
A gentleman wants a kiss.
The little bit of like glancing research I did on the cast, like the you know, secondary cast members in this, almost all of them were in the Lucy Show.
Yeah,
some incarnation of a Lucy Show.
Oh man, why wasn't Gordon Gale ever on an episode of Star Trek? That would have been amazing.
Lots of Desi Lu, obviously.
Mm-hmm, sure. Yeah.
Reger is an interesting...
Why were all these people on Mission Impossible?
guy. He was...
Sorry, Pete.
No, it's okay. Reger was played by... I just wrote it down. Harry Towns.
Harrytown.
Harrytowns. Let me tell you about Harrytowns.
Won't you take me to...
Oh, you stole it from me.
Although some... This might feed into what you were talking about, John. Some of his dialogue was dubbed by Walker Edmondson, which is weird. Edmondson.
Oh, weird.
Of course, Enoch himself. But Harrytowns was an actor who was primarily, or I don't know, in his main role was in life. He played a priest. He played an Episcopal priest, like in that was just his gig. He was a priest and then also an actor who was in some things. He was in a bunch of movies.
Oh, it's clobbering time in my stomach.
He was in the movie version of Brothers Karamazov with Shatner. He was, he was in, do you guys remember there's an episode of The Incredible Hulk.
There's many.
Oh my God, I know exactly what you're going to say.
You do.
Oh my God. That's that guy?
Yeah, he meets a guy who's like can basically like a proto Hulk. He meets like a guy who can turn into a Hulk years before he was. And the proto Hulk is played by Dick Durock, who goes on to play Swamp Thing, I think, later. But the old man who he turns into is Harrytowns.
Oh my gosh, my mind is blown. Thank you.
I remember the Fox Show Werewolf that was basically a ripoff of the Incredible Hulk. Did a very similar episode.
Right.
Yeah, just throwing that out there.
Falcon and Winter Soldier. They find an old man Captain America.
Yes, right? They do.
Yeah,
it's a weird trope, I guess.
Which is based on a really good comic series called Red, White, and the Truth. I think Kyle Baker does the art for
The Truth is the main name of it, and then Kyle write it too. I think or no,
I don't know. He did not write it. I knew he drew it. Wasn't Dwayne McDuffie, but it was somebody of that level of quality.
Right.
Good series, everybody. Read comic books.
Anyway, Harrytowns is Reacher. They go find these guys, and the guys are just like, they're like, well, we don't really like what's going on either, but wait, we don't want to upset Landrew. And they're trying to figure out what, they're trying to kind of help them, and Reacher's, they're part of the underground. They take them, they're like, all right, let's go. First, one guy gets zapped. I think the old man from The World is Hollow gets zapped.
Yeah.
And poor then, they go, they're like, all right, let's run. And then they find out, basically they unravel that it's like, okay, everybody's being controlled by Landrew. And I don't remember how, to be honest, once they get to this point, I really start to drift. I really start to zone out because it's like, I feel like most of the setup is like, oh, that's the part that I'm looking forward to. Like, I wanted it to be more kind of like planet exciting and if they had to like get stuff done in these 12 hours and then like we gotta like fight the clock because it's 6 o'clock, everybody's gonna be, you know, like looting and pillaging and raping again, so but they kind of set it up and then it kind of goes away and they kind of wander around for a bit, and I don't remember how they get to the point, I don't know if you guys remember, but how they get from the point of okay, Landrew's controlling everything, oh, Landrew's obviously a computer that's 6,000 years old.
They there's a couple scenes of like, you're thinking what I'm thinking, aren't you, Spock? And Spock's like, mm-hmm. And
that's an easy way to get stuff done, Bill. Yeah. I bet we're thinking the same thing, right? Spock, let's say it on the count of three. You said, like,
I feel like this is one of the ultimate, could have been an animated episode. Not necessarily that the story would lend itself to animation.
I don't think you can but
half hour long.
Or rape on a Saturday morning.
Right, right, yeah.
But meaning more the half hour long part, because it feels like this episode kind of buffers for a while. Like, there'll be points where something should be happening and then it just doesn't, like you're saying. Like Kirk asks questions like an entire sequence later that he should have asked in the first place when these things were happening. Like, they'll talk about Landrew, they'll talk about this, and he'll be like, no, we're not those people. And then like the next scene when they're in the, you know, they go into that place, well, I know a place and we can hide.
Yeah.
And then they bring those things up again. And then he's like, well, yeah, what is that? It's like, what? Wait, what? Yeah. It's really weird that you didn't already ask that question. Like, it feels like they're like, well, we're going to have another story point come, you know, in the next sequence. So, or act, or however you want to put it in television terms. So hold off on that. Just don't ask the question, even though it would make much more sense if you did right now. And then we'll have you ask the question later. Like, you just heard of this for the first time.
There's another weird, like where they do, they're like, all right, we're going to help you. And I forgot exactly how played it. It was like, we're going to help you. And he's like, great. What do we do about Landry? Like, shh, don't say that name. Like, well, how are you so going to help me? Like, that's what I need help, knowing what the hell is going on right here. Yeah.
Ixnay on the Andrew, eh?
There's so much of that where his name is mentioned and everybody's like, oh, no. It's like, come on. They've mentioned his name a few times and nothing's happened. I mean, it doesn't always.
Yeah. Well, you're allowed to say it if you're being nice. You know, if you're saying praise to Landru or something.
Yeah,
or
don't take Landru's name in vain.
Right.
Hmm. So along that note, they go, they find the thing. Landru pops up and is like, hey, you guys don't talk bad. And
played by Dean Martin.
Yeah. Hey, you know, and all these people get in my room.
Come on, Pally, be of the body.
And all these people get on my planet. Landru is played by Charles McCauley, who, two credits of note, he is, we'll see him again at the our finale for ABCDTOS.
Oh my
Wolf
gosh,
in the Fold.
Yeah.
He plays Jarrus, councilman? No.
Wow.
Chancellor Jarrus? I forgot his. But also notably, he played Count Dracula in the film Blackula.
Oh, wow. Mm.
So...
He is also not William Atherton, though I did think he was for just a second. Right. I really got a William Atherton vibe.
Yeah.
Oh,
definitely.
I want to say one of my most disappointing cinematic experiences was finally seeing Blackula, where I'd built it up for decades. And it's, you know, love old monster movies, love blaxploitation movies. Saw this. I'm like, all right, this is going to be a lot of fun. And I'm like, this isn't a lot of fun. This looks like it was made for $4 and not in a good way. All right, I'm very disappointed. You've cursed me, King of Cartoons. I shake my fist at you.
I was going to say, there's another Star Trek connection to that movie, The King of Cartoons.
There you go.
Yeah. True story. I first saw Blackula when I was in college in the lobby waiting to give plasma. They thought they were real seriously. They thought they were real clever.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I think I watched almost the whole movie. That place was busy. Sometimes if I wanted beer money for the weekend, sometimes I had to wait a couple hours.
Oh wow!
To give plasma. Those were the days.
I will say this: such is my obsession that does not mean at some point I won't see Scream Blackula Scream, because I'm always like, well, I really didn't like Blackula, but Blackula and Pam Grier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of
with Pam but not Landru.
Speaking of people who look like other people, it finally hit me that we just lost Bob Einstein recently, and it occurred to me, we saw Human Eric's, I forget what his name is, on the bridge.
Oh, yeah, Hadley.
And it occurred to me that he looks a lot like Bob Einstein in some ways.
I wish he talked like Bob Einstein. That would
want to hear a joke. Let me get through it.
So we get, speaking of the bridge there, the bridge crew, no real rhyme or reason to who gets to go down with the away team. It's just like, I mean, I guess it makes sense that, they seem to really kind of play up. I got confused between who's O'Neill and who is Lindstrom.
O'Neill's still on the planet.
He's on the planet.
Yeah, they're looking for him.
Lindstrom is the guy with the blue eyes that's on the bridge.
He's got like the medical thing and like it, or it's weird because when Sulu shows up, he's like, oh, you, it's your fault. And he points at Lindstrom and we're all like, who the hell is that?
he's a sociology officer.
Ew.
And so it was his job to make up the clothes.
Right.
That's what he means by it's your fault.
Oh,
and
weird.
Then they, so we don't, but we don't know. I don't think we know that until the last scene when he says we left him behind. He's a sociologist.
He gets left behind.
Well, I think that's what he says. Right. Sociology, right? Or sociology.
Twofold, because he also get like in one of these infinite drafts. It just says he's a specialist here. It doesn't. I don't know what.
Sylvester Stallone.
Let's click on Lindstrom. This is a memory alpha. Everything's clickable. he was a human male Starfleet officer. Blah 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 blah. Yeah, he served as one of the ship's sociologists. So he had a whole subplot in one of these drafts where he fell in love with one of the Baitons, potentially.
That totally is almost there. Like you see them, you see the residuals of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How could you do that to your daughter?
Because he becomes of the body, right?
He gets zapped when Bones gets zapped, right?
Oh, he does? Oh, okay.
Doesn't so
he?
You could see him like hooking up during the during the red hour during festival.
In case we're going to get yelled at, I don't know for sure that he gets of the body. There's another guy in the party who becomes of the body.
It's not him?
Well, there are the two guys. There are the two, you know, no names. They're the two what would be red shirts if they weren't in costume. One of them is zapped. One of them is part of the. One of them is not zapped.
Right.
Well,
one of them's Scott Baio. The other's
one of them's Scott Baio.
One of them is
Bravo John.
Steve Baio, or who was the one?
Donnie Baio.
Jason Baio. Wait,
I don't know.
Fred Baio.
Dougie Baio.
The
Boner Baio.
Yes,
the Goofy Baio.
It's Galloway. Galloway is the one.
Okay. Galloway Baio.
McCoy and Galloway get. Become of the body.
Everyone who's going to yell at us, just yell at Pete, John, and Joe. I was on top of things.
There's too many of these like background boring white guys.
I'm trying to think of some joke of somebody's girlfriend running away. Like, what happened to you, Galloway? You know, that's why I'm single. It takes me more time than I have to provide for this episode. But know that it would be there.
We can
put on my marketing hat here and say, it's the new. Over-the-counter brand of doing a Star Trek podcast. It's Galloway.
No.
Why?
No. Well, we put a lot of work into those.
Yeah, wow.
just kidding.
Well, we greased those wheels.
I hate it. I absolutely hate it every time Dana Gould does a thing like that because he's so like nerd negative, like which is, you know, absolutely like in the 80s, you know, when he first started doing stuff. Yes, like that's... You make your, you know, you're appealing to the norms, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But now it's just things have so turned, like it feels kind of hacked to keep doing the same.
Wow.
Like,
actually, it felt so hacked that even though now I completely understand the joke you were making, like it doesn't even occur to me like,
no,
why would I have problems socially for liking Star Trek?
Yeah.
You know,
and like. I mean, so I feel like most, maybe not most, but probably, maybe most, like a good. Good chunk, perhaps a majority of the people I know who really enjoy Star Trek are women. So it's not a, I was making a hack joke.
Mm-hmm. Shame on you.
Not that Dana Gould's a hack.
I know he's not. I love him so much.
You can make hacky jokes and not be a hack.
He does rely on some.
One thing I've kind of realized about Dana Gould as an interviewer, though, is, hey, Pete, do you like Star Trek? And the reason why I ask if you like Star Trek is because I like Star Trek. And the reason I like Star Trek is because I grew up watching Star Trek in Boston. And I kind of think that Star Trek's one of those things you either like or dislike. But I personally like it a lot. So do you like Star Trek?
And before you answer.
Yeah.
That's why you should always do his interviews as Dr. Zaius.
Yeah.
This is better.
Yeah, sure. Really.
Or if you're a woman guest in the Dana Gould show, let me ask you a question, but I really don't care.
Oh,
I've noticed lately, like with female guests, Dana Gould's not that great.
Hmm. I've never listened to, I've only watched the Dr. Zaius, Dr. Z or whatever. I've never seen or heard Dana Gould. I've heard him interviewed many times, not be the interviewee.
Yeah.
You listen to the most recent
interviewer. Sorry.
If you listen to his most recent interview, it is with a woman who wrote the Midnight Movie monograph for Plan 9 for Outer Space, from Plan 9 from Outer Space. And it is basically like, hi, I've had this expert on to talk about Plan 9 for from Outer Space, so I can talk about Plan 9 from Outer Space. Mm. And she's basically like, and there are things like, well, I mean, it kind of reminds me of the problem from No Time to Die. I didn't see that movie. Oh, well, let me tell you anyway. You know, there's a lot of like, this isn't, I love you, buddy, but maybe this isn't so hot.
What?
You know?
I hate Dana Gould now.
Yeah. How about that guy?
No, that wasn't the idea. All I did was, I was just
making a Star Trek joke.
Let me tell you some good things about this episode.
It's the ladies' hour.
Here are two firsts.
First time we see sexual assault in an episode.
No, this
is 20 episodes in.
I mean, 21.
We've seen it at least 16 times.
First time we see Scotty in command of the Enterprise.
Oh, get out of here. That's
chronologically,
awesome.
Not alphabetically, of course.
Yeah. Oh.
So
there's also another major chronological development in this episode.
The first time we hear the mention of the Prime Directive.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? Okay.
And they don't know what it is yet.
Yeah. Speaking of chronological firsts, this is the first episode with a clock.
Is it?
I have no idea, but there's a clock in it.
It probably is.
It could be. It could easily be.
First season, 20 episodes in, it's a pretty good bluff to make anyway.
There's the chronometer on Sulu's thing which episode was that? Doomsday Machine?
Naked Time?
I don't know.
3 o'clock and all clobberin's well. This is chronometer. You get it?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
We get
I know
it.
You're familiar with a book called The Fantastic Four.
Was it a novel?
Called The Fantastic Four. It was a title. It's collected in book form. I have many of them.
We get. Two more shout outs, and then I'm pretty much done with my notes here. three. One plot. No, we'll save for the ending about the ending. But here's a bonus. I do really like Bones's like vacant, happy, contented face when he's sitting in the cell.
Oh yeah,
he's got this great like it's almost like kind of the same thing that he puts on this will come up plot wise, but when they're trying to like you know be absurd to fool the robots to explode the robots in iMUD. Mm-hmm. You know, his same kind of like I'm so the sweet little like smiley face.
He has this great energy, this great charisma that like you want Bones to be happy. So seeing him even in a delusional content state, it's like, oh, that's my guy. You know,
maybe they should leave him behind for Landru.
But when he's just kind of like staring into space, like he's not looking at anybody or anything. He's just kind of looking at the wall with this like happy, content thing and not moving at all. It's totally perfect.
Nothing
like,
on his mind but mint juleps.
Right.
Yeah.
What's up with earlier when they're in the street? What's up with earlier when they're in the street and they're being like attacked by the body? Like everybody's picked up stuff to throw at them and hit them with. And Kurt goes, you know, phasers set to stun, widespread. And twice Kirk shoots people and nobody else does. It's, like it's almost like they'll check it out. Kirk won't even realize it because he'll be busy. We just won't do what he says. Because he goes fire and everybody's holding their phasers up and he's the only one that fires. At first I thought maybe that they just forgot to put in the phaser effect, but no, they're not shooting. Nobody's getting hit or anything.
No. It's like, kind of like the Star Trek equivalent to like who volunteers and every other member of a troop steps back. Mm-hmm. Except for Lou Costello or Jerry Lewis or something.
Or it's like the equivalent of Bugs Bunny, like there's and Yosemite Sam are having a duel and they're going 10 paces, but Bugs Bunny just follows them instead.
Right, up against his back.
I do like
it works for a lot of cartoon gags.
Kirk, what are you doing? You just shot those guys. He's like, oh, I said fire. They're like, oh.
Yeah.
Here's a real world note that I have that I used to work with a guy.
Puck, what a jerk.
I used to work with a guy that
should have gone over a lot better.
Nope. He said no.
Yeah.
I said
no. Really, like, nipped in the bud.
We're not making real world. We can talk about remote control all you want, but
I know I used to work with a guy who was a big Trekkie, and he was from New Orleans.
Oh, I bet that guy was lonely on Saturday nights.
hack material. Mm-hmm.
Virgin, was he?
He was the systems administrator at the magazine that I worked at.
It's so weird that the big Trekkie you knew was not one of our Forbidden Planet compatriots.
No.
Like, no, when I got a grown-up job, that's when I met the real nerds.
He was a great guy, and we were talking. He would always laugh. He would share with me news stuff coming in from Louisiana because there is a prominent political family in Louisiana whose last name is Landru. It's L-A-N-D-R-I-E-U. Landru.
Landru. They pronounce it real weird.
They just pronounce it
Landru. All the parishes will hear the body.
He would just be like reading me these headlines. He's like, oh, check it out. Like, you know, Landru accused of this, but they're like, they're still around and they're still in government. Like one of them is in the Biden administration right now, I think, but they're like, I always think of that.
Wait, Landru was in the Biden administration?
Landru was in the Biden administration.
Ooh, that gets you thinking, doesn't it?
I think it's actually just a projector. I think it's just a, mm-hmm. yeah. If you start talking to the guys,
check it out.
He just kind of monotones over you and stuff.
Well, I'd love to see like a staff meeting. It's like a floating guy in the Oval Office. Landrew, what do you think?
The body must be protected and maintained.
So we should do a mask mandate. That's what you're saying, Landrew.
But yes, that always makes me laugh, seeing stuff with Landrew. If you look up, I think his name's not Andrew Landrew. That would be too crazy.
Oh, that would be really good.
Or perfect. Who are we kidding here, guys? Come
Andrew
on.
Andrew
Landrew. But if anybody's listening from Louisiana, maybe you appreciate this episode on a different level.
They're not listening anymore after Joe's impersonation of Louisiana people.
They tuned out.
I guarantee they are.
We're so sorry.
Oh, don't have a gator mouth when you're talking about a jumbo fish.
We're going to alienate, making fun of accents, so we're going to alienate the entire planet.
We already upset the Canadians. But
yeah, we have no Canadian listeners anymore.
They're polite. They came back.
Oh, that's right. They apologize.
I don't know. There's always a passive aggressiveness about like Canadians, though.
Let's not go back to Canadians.
We're a peaceful people who like the sport where we hit people with sticks,
You gotta let it out somehow. It's better to do it that way than actually.
I mean, the thing about Canadians, they're not bright and they're violent. That's just all I have to say.
Boy. Speaking of Canadians,
the Irish, one
of them does. Captain Kirk does a thing here where it basically they talk the computer to death, and it's the trope. Mm-hmm. It's the thing.
Why do you do that to me?
It's you remember that character, the trope? He was part of the Terrific Three.
Yeah.
That's like, again, I really kind of, not that I tuned completely out, but I was into the episode, and then it just kind of became this like, all right, let's just stretch for a little bit, and then, oh, look, it's a computer. All right, hey, computer, you're bad. You're like, oh, what? And it kills itself, you know?
Yeah,
computer.
It is the...
Should die now.
It is the easiest round of, like, logical jujitsu that Kirk ever fought. Like, no, you stink. You're right.
No, I don't. No, I do. Wait,
I'm sorry, but using the term logic jujitsu, that's copyrighted by Mission Log. I don't think you can actually use it on another Star Trek podcast.
All right.
I think we just
fine. Pragmatic judo.
Well, there you go.
Let me tell you that.
Yeah, sure.
Talk a computer to death is the name of the Memory Alpha page, and which leads to induced self-destruction. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Kirk Kevorkian. Was quite adept at inducing self-destruction of artificial intelligence.
Him and Afrika Bambaataa and Johnny Lydon.
He achieved the feat at least four times. Return of the Archons, which is this, which am us. The Changeling, iMUD, and we have one more left, the Ultimate Computer.
Yay.
Not self-destruction. That was world destruction, the Afrika Bambaataa and Johnny Lydon song.
About destruction.
Gotcha.
This is a world destruction. Your life ain't nothing.
It's like a weird kind of conflagration, perhaps an amalgam, if you will, of two.
It is a super patriot.
Two tropes that bother me, which is the talking the computer to death and the like. Hey, like if people can't have freedom, you know, if all their needs are taken care of, but they don't have freedom, they're gonna die and be unhappy. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not as upset by it this time because it is like, well, maybe their needs aren't taken care of because they're all out there like
they're not having a good time. They're just walking around kind of empty and vacant.
Some of them are probably having a good time, and others are being raped and murdered and beaten to death. So it's kind of catch-as-catch-can.
Yeah. I'm talking about beyond the red hour. We all love the red hour, Joe.
Oh,
but
sure.
I mean, like, beyond that, they're just kind of walking around, they're vacant and stupid and just not doing anything. It's not...
I don't know. Be like,
have you seen Dawn of the Dead? That is man at his happiest.
It's not the apple. It's not the apple where everyone's like innocent and having a nice time and it's great.
Wait, the apple, the Golden Globus film, or the apple in Star Trek episode?
Speed.
It's neither of these things.
So it's all about Bim.
It's not Bim, Bilar.
Ah, okay.
Or Ben.
I don't know. I feel like it sets up and then just kind of, it doesn't fall completely apart, but it leaves me wanting more of something. Like I wish there was a more interesting twist to this. Like one thing that I thought was this just me? Am I missing it? But no, in the Memory Alpha page itself, it's just like, yeah, they don't really tell you why.
Right.
Landrieu took control of everybody and why the Red Hour happens and why all this is going on.
Right.
As earlier I said, I want to bookmark something in regard to the ending.
Please.
And this isn't necessarily the ending, but like when I was watching this episode, and you know, I've seen it a bazillion times before, but it still, it was like one of those, like, wow, this kind of is one of those episodes that's really Twilight Zone-y. If you're watching in the beginning, like, I don't understand the society. And it also, as far as I understand the subgenre, has a really big kind of like folk horror, you know, effect to it. If you, you know, familiar with like The Wicker Man. And yeah, and it just kind of like, oh, okay, falls apart. And my first kind of instinct was like, well, it's a first season episode before they figured everything out. And I finally realized that's no longer an excuse because, yeah, you know what? The first season has City on the Edge of Forever, Balance of Terror, Space Heat. Like, first season has a lot of really good episodes.
Season. Like, it might be,
Yeah.
Not knowing the Kinks is not an excuse. I mean, they're the Davies brothers. They had a lot of hits.
I was going to say, we all know the Kinks.
Right.
Yeah, really, this is between City on the Edge and, you know, Amok Time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, isn't Space Seed the next episode?
Yeah, it is.
I only know the alphabet. I don't know what.
Pete, there's no need to brag. Okay?
You guys, I know the alphabet. I think I can get us, on the list.
Mm-hmm. At least on one of the lettered parts of the list.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's how we get on the list, using the alphabet. It overall just kind of like it leaves me not cold, but it leaves me wanting more. Like, I want this to be a better episode. It's got some good roots. It's got an interesting setup, and it seems like it great. It's a slug line, you know, a one sentence pitch thing, you know, from the original document, from the, like, hey, what if this happened? Like, oh, great. Can you turn that into an episode? Maybe. Here's five of us working on it. We kind of came up with something.
It actually could have used like four or five more passes on the script.
Right. Yeah.
Or maybe Fontana. A few less. I wonder if there's a better script, like somewhere four or five drafts back.
You know what this needs? This needs David Gerald. Damn.
DC Fontana would have been great. Yeah. And you know what? This is a Pevney, guys.
Yeah,
this,
it is.
This might be the bottom of the Pevney list.
The bottom of the Pevney barrel.
And I'm not saying I hate this episode or anything like that, but Pevney is like, you know, Pevney's pretty much level. Hitting it out of the park every time. And this one didn't really have that Pevney touch
There definitely has its moments. I mean, look and feel is pretty nice sometimes, but then it also has moments where it's just kind of like, why am I staring at this wall?
I can't think of a distinct shot or anything at all.
I got a question, because John, you mentioned DC Fontana. We're about like 2/3 in. Like, did DC Fontana not just script supervise a lot and not write a lot of episodes? Because it's a name that's like you know, it is a name that is branded into my brain for Star Trek. But at the same time, like, we don't have a lot of episodes that she gets credit on.
I think she was like the story editor. I think she was the head of the, she kind of ran the writer's room. Like, she would be the, I don't know if you call her the showrunner necessarily. That'd been Gene Kuhn, but.
Yeah. Or Roddenberry, depending on how you look at it. Yeah.
I mean, he was like the creator, but I think Kuhn would have been, I don't know. They didn't do it. I don't think they did it the same way back then, but it is funny how few episodes she is the like credited screenwriter on. She actually seems to be more prominent on the animated series. Like, and that makes you go, well, maybe it's because they went like, let's not do her script, you know, for whatever reason. I don't know. It just seems weird that a lot of those animated episodes are scripts that didn't quite make it. And a lot of them are hers. It's like, wait, why?
But like, not counting the like famous sci-fi writers, you know, your Ellison, your Matheson, your whatchamacallit, Tom Sturgeon. Like, if you tell me, if you say Star Trek episode written by, my immediate thought would be DC Fontana.
Fontana or Gerald. Those are the two. And Gerald didn't write that many of them. It's just like, he's such
a huge
one. Well, he came up in the animated series too, and then started out on Next Gen.
Followed from there. Maybe because you're just thinking of it from the credits of the animated series growing up, Joe.
Well, but I never watched the animated series growing up. That would be the problem.
That explains it.
I got another note here that I just saw.
Well, I'm a liar.
It was hidden under a different episode, under a different note here. We've got the Vulcan face punch
Right, yeah.
I do like that they have the follow-up line. I guess
by the time I was done writing the note, I was like, oh, all right, they pointed that out. They lampshaded that. That's funny.
It makes you think the only reason Spock punches the guy is so Kirk can make a comment about it, which means that even in season one, the nerve pinch was enough of a thing that people would like respond to that and think that was funny. And yeah, that's interesting. I think.
Yes. I would agree.
And speaking of Spock, did anybody else get a Star Trek the Motion Picture Spock vibe off of Spock in this episode with his,
the
black? Like the hood or even just that robe that he's wearing and stuff. He looks very motion picture.
I didn't think motion picture, but I did think they're really inconsistent to whether the ears matter or not. Because theoretically, he's wearing a robe to, you know, disguise his appearance, but only in certain scenes. And when he does not have the robe on, the Landrians? What are these people called?
The Baitons.
The Baitons are like, whoa, pointy ears. You must be a devil.
They're very
I guarantee lot. Because they're from Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
You got crawfish ears, boy.
That they do not. Like, I think it is a precaution, and then, like, they just find out that they don't care because everybody's being controlled. Because, like, Landru is not, like, they're not noticing other people. They're just controlled by Landru. They're, like, almost like, spoilers, I guess, for a show from a year ago, but the kind of NPCs in the town in WandaVision, you know, when she's, like, the people who are directly out of her, you know, the people that they're interacting with are controlled, and they seem, you know, totally... you know, like full characters. And then there's other people that are just kind of like walking into a wall for 3 days. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it seems kind of like that it's just like, all right, everybody's just got a really base kind of low level operating system. Nobody cares what you look like or what you're doing. And the only time like one, they have to like peel one out to talk to them for a second when they first show up. Cause it's like, oh, these are weird people. Somebody should ask a question. Yeah. So overall, I think I would say it's a,
sociologist episode.
Yeah, exactly. It's a
I'm adding a new category.
I'm going to put this in a. I want to say it's an engineering episode in that I think it just needs. It's got the heart of something, and it just needs more work. Mm. It's half baked, as it were. Mm. So I'm going to call that engineering.
I'm not going to make the Dave Chappelle reference that you opened me up for. So we're even.
Okay.
Oh. I don't half baked.
Oh, okay. Jim Brewer.
Neither of those guys are worth talking about these days.
Right? No, yeah, they're both idiots.
John Stewart has a nice cameo in the film.
Yeah, there you go.
He's not so great.
He's been a little
He's not as
Willie Nelson has a cameo in the film.
Perfect human being. There you go. Mm.
And Snoop Dogg. If we could combine the two,
I'm always worried about talking about Willie Nelson because I'm worried I'm going to Tom Petty him. But it's
come on, Pete. He's right on the edge. It's not going to be your
sitting
fault.
On the edge. Don't.
It's like being shocked that Betty White.
Tom
died.
Petty was not. Yeah. Willie Nelson is.
Don't.
Anyway, let's
move on. What do we
There's no way that Willie Nelson's going to die.
Oh boy. I'll go pick out a suit. What do you think? What do you give this grade this episode? Return of the Archon. Oh, first off, anybody ever play Archon for the Commodore 64 or the Apple?
Did I ever? I played mod for it, but yes, in the early 80s when I got my first computer, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I had a lot of games on my Commodore 64.
I was a big fan of its sister game, Mail Order Monsters.
I remember the first time I went to the first loft that you had in Williamsburg with several other people. Pete's not independently wealthy, but
I'm not like a Facts of Life spinoff or anything.
We played a PS1 game that you felt would be Mail Order Monsters adjacent, but it really wasn't. But everybody had a fun time anyway.
I'm always just searching for those initial thrills of those games that I used to love. But you know, Archon is like great, battle chess kind of.
Yeah, but a great premise because it specifically dealt with like, you know, Greco-Roman mythological monsters, if I remember correctly, right?
Largely, I think, right?
Yeah. Like, it's a shame that, like, there's something to do. You could buy the rights to Archon and do something really grand with that if you had the creativity and the chutzpah.
But this is totally a long tangent for the end of the episode, but both of those games came out through EA, through Entertainment Arts, Electronic Arts, before they you know, were the huge thing that they were. They were big. They were interesting, you know, making a lot of fun, interesting games. So
before they went in the Winter Games direction for the rest of their career.
Oh, that's Epix. Epix was Winter Game.
It
was
I always thought it was EA. My mistake.
No, EA was. But anyway, that I wonder who would have the rights to this, because both of those games are all fun and could be. Would love to see those revisited. Anyway, what do we grade this?
I'll be weird and I'll go first because I actually, for some reason, really like this episode. Like it's very random. A lot of it's disconnected and doesn't make sense. And a lot of threads are dropped, but, I really like Spacey McCoy. I love Sulu in this one. And Sulu's fine really too. Good. And Sulu's just like, hey, I'm fine. Taking my seat back. Thanks. Mm-hmm. I love that moment. I don't know. Then I love the crazy Red Hour guy. And I just love the weird. This is like one of the first episodes of Star Trek I think about, maybe when I think about Star Trek. And it's somehow not boring to me. Like, even
you like this
random
episode, huh, Tom?
I do.
You watch
it's real
it again?
Good. It's
you watch it multiple times? Sorry, I'm just being dumb.
It's almost the Star Trek hour. I love the guy. There's one of the hooded guys. There's like the weird robots, and like one of them goes, with thanks, happy communing.
Yeah. Is that the one that's played by Sid Haig?
I was just going to say, Sid Haig plays one of them. Yeah.
Do you see his face, though?
I don't think so. I couldn't figure out who he was.
And his voice is distorted, you know, has the distortion to make him sound more like a robot. Still, it's Sid Haig. He's in Coffee.
Hooray.
I don't know if he's in Scream, Blackula, Scream, but there's at least a 75% chance that he is.
Hmm.
Oh, and this is obvious, but we have our song, you know, watch thing. Somebody says Freedom of Choice in this episode.
Oh, exactly.
And we did a show about a band called Devo, and they have a song called Freedom of Choice.
That's true. They
look
do.
It up. Do they?
They do. Huh. I'm going to give this episode.
Trust me, Joe, it's what you want.
It is what you want. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give this a B+.
Wow.
I just have good feelings about this episode. I can't explain it, but I just like it. I enjoy it. Leave me alone.
No. I am not going to challenge you on that.
All right.
But I wish I liked it as much as you do. I'm not.
I wish you did too.
Mm. I feel like I have to go more. Like, it does start out well, like I said, and it's got some good Star Trek stuff in it, but it's a little bit of a stretch. So I think I might say it's more of like a C+ for me.
Hmm.
That's because what I was going to say as well.
I do. You know, I don't hate it, and it. You know. The actions, you know, it does follow a narrative, even though you're like, wait a minute, why is any of this happening? Like, if just like, take out some of those that second half where it's just kind of like, okay, they're going from point A to point B, and then they're just going to be like, oh yeah, it's a computer, kill it. Throw in a little bit of the backstory there, and it could be, it would, you know, be a much higher shelved episode for me.
Yeah, I agree with Pete. C+ for me. Mm. It's like I kind of like it, but
yeah.
But it just doesn't quite do it for me. Like I said, it feels like it's really padded, and I don't know. There could have been there. I mean, you talk about this a lost subplot of a love. I don't know if it needs to be a love story or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's like it's missing like a subplot. It could use one more thing, and kind of wish it had that. And it's strange that it's not that. Kirk falling in love with one of the, like, just something basic like that.
Yeah.
Does anything to drive the engine? There's just not much of an engine there. It's just kind of inert.
I still kind of like it.
If I were going to do a pass, you know, one thing I would do, maybe have a couple of shots back in the Enterprise of Sulu being completely brainwashed. Yeah. Like, that might have been fun.
Yeah.
But they kind
refer to him, but you never see it. Yeah.
And it could have been interesting. Yeah. If they could have tied that, there could have been some sort of diagnostic thing happening with Sulu that then gets fed back to Kirk and Spock where they can start to figure out what's happening. You know,
Hit him over the head with a frying pan. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
It'll snap him out of it.
But I mean, like, there's the establishment. There's the establishing thing of a mystery without any, you know, without any solving of a mystery. Which is kind of a bummer and is flawed. The one thing I want to say before I give any kind of grade to it, and I think it's something we've missed, the best thing in this episode is Scotty saying, oh, and Sulu's back to normal. And then there's a shot of George Takei basically shrugging his shoulders with a smile as if saying, hey, what do you want from me? I was of the body.
And the assumption is...
might be the best thing in the entirety of Star Trek.
Yeah, I agree with you completely.
Isn't the assumption that he became okay when Kirk...
killed Landry.
Won?
Yeah.
And it was like seconds later, earlier. He's in full uniform and ready to take his post.
Because he's a pro, like, John.
I guess so, man.
He's the helmsman. You know, this is a man who knows what he's doing. But yeah, like, it's also
better.
It's an episode that, like, I remembered as having more Sulu in it, but what I have is really nice. So I'm happy about that.
That's pretty good Sulu.
Yeah.
It is.
So, as I was saying, you know, in terms of a grade, earlier I said there's like some folk horror elements that I think are kind of neat. There's a Twilight Zone-iness to it that I think is kind of neat. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, we'll see Kirk outwit a computer in, you know, we'll see Kirk outwit a computer in far more narratively satisfactory ways. It lacks the Trinity. It lacks the Iron Triangle of Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. In fact, at the end where they're doing the thank you for saying I'm a computer, I'm like, why isn't McCoy there saying racist things about Vulcans?
Yeah,
you know?
Really.
Yeah, I mean, they're together the whole damn episode.
Yeah.
There's really never any three-way interaction. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. There isn't. On the other hand, and, you know, call me biased, but hey, I'm allowed to have my grades affected by what my grades are affected by. The two non-Devo things I remember Tom saying to me initially that also non-Indiana Jones things are, one, he corrected me when I said, like, oh, I'm watching, I can't remember the title, the episode with Garth, and he texted me, Lord Garth! And the other was, for whatever reason, he once randomly asked me if I was of the body. So,
See?
Because of my love of big-time Tom Taylor... I gotta go B minus.
Oh, there you go.
I do associate this episode with him more so than, and not, you know, not in a bad way.
No, I take that as a.
He loves the episode, doesn't he?
Speaking of being of the body.
Quote it all the time. That's why I love it.
Speaking of being of the body, by which I mean like a 2,500 calorie meal being of the body. Tom, I had my first pizza from Giordano's, and oh my God.
See?
Yeah.
See? Maybe we should do that tonight. Wow.
I was going to
have other people there because I could not move the next day.
I almost brought it up last week's episode, but I, speaking of things that are not have not aged well slash have been canceled, what have you, I don't think a lot of the it might not have even been well aged when it debuted, but Free Enterprise, the movie, about the guys who find William Shatner and want to get him to do this thing.
And they like Star Trek and they are misogynists who have sex.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there, but some of the references last week I kept wanting to say, like, who cares what year Requiem for a Martian was on? Because that's what his love interest says to him at some point. And then he has that moment of being like, Methuselah. And she's like, what? And he's like, the episode was called Requiem for Methuselah. It aired on February. Like, he goes, he has to do the nerdy correct. But then in this one, Return of the Archons, like, that was one point where they're like, you know, the two main characters are arguing, and he's like, dude, relax. You are not of the body. Like chill out. Like I said, there's a lot of problems with that movie that were there, I'm sure, when it first happened.
Did really like Star Trek.
It was like, oh my God, they're making all these cool Star Trek and Star Wars references and comic books. And it's fun to mix Star Trek into your regular everyday.
Mm-hmm.
Discussions like that. Anyway, so there's a mixed bag of reviews for that one. They say Return of the Archons. They do say the Archons. They say we are the Archons. They say like, hey, Archons, but they don't say it's the Return of the Archons.
Do they even say you've come back to us, comma, Archons?
They say Archons! And then we cut to space and it echoes. Next week, we have another return. We're returning again. Except instead of the Archons, you know who's returning next week? Tomorrow.
Oh.
We're returning to tomorrow. Now,
there's that song on the Muppets that I think we could reference.
Could be.
I went to the town tomorrow. You have to leave today. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it's a thing. Muppets, everybody. Watch it.
Not to add to the curse, but I was singing the Willie Nelson song. Days.
Well, now he's dead, Pete. Congratulations.
Doomed, guys. Way to go.
Doomed.
Oh, Willie, sorry.
Love you, Willie, R.I.P. But yeah, Return to Tomorrow, which I don't know. It's not the Enterprise incident, and it's not the Gary 7, right? Or was Gary 7 the Enterprise incident?
I actually remember this one.
It's not Tomorrow is Yesterday?
No.
It's Return to Tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll Return to Tomorrow is the Air Force pilot.
Who knows?
I'll give you a hint. It's got Pulaski in it.
Oh.
Yeah. It's the other one with Pulaski.
Well, we'll find out what it is and who's in it and what's going on next week. Hopefully you're still enjoying the show here. Remember, social media, ABCDTOS on Twitter and Instagram. And on Facebook, go to the ABCDTOS briefing room. Briefing room?
Yeah.
Why did that sound weird when I said it?
I don't know, because you said it weird.
And don't forget, don't look at briefing us. Room.
Briefing forget- room.
Patreon, if you go to abcdtos.com/Patreon, you should get to our Patreon page. I've had a lot of problems with website redirects across the board on all my websites recently, but I think that one works. Should take you to the thing where you can, if you support the show, you get access to Subspace Chatter, where we've been talking about all kinds of stuff. We just had a conversation about Facts of Life that you'll be able to pick up this week, maybe, which was a lot of fun.
It's pretty brilliant.
You'll learn a lot.
Meet us back here next week. We're going to close out the R's with return. We'll return next week with Return to Tomorrow here on ABCDTOS.
I'm more of a boxer room guy myself. Happy communing.